People move in and out of cities all the time. It's a fact of modern life, but Kansas City is losing people with bachelor's degrees to other cities at a faster rate than they're coming in. That's according to a recent report from KC Rising, a group of local business leaders who are working to take Kansas City's economy to the next level. So what's going on with that? I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're tackling that question with the real-life stories behind the statistics. Starting with Taylor Miller. She works for Cerner here in town, but not for long, because she got a job offer in Seattle that she couldn't refuse. Hi, Taylor.
Hi.
Well, a begrudging congratulations on your new job.
Thanks, Gina.
What's the gig?
So I will be negotiating contracts with Amazon's enterprise clients for Amazon Web Services.
So Amazon, that's a pretty big employer.
Yes, it is.
How did this all come about?
Amazon contacted me and we talked about it. It seemed like a great opportunity. And
so just out of the blue, Amazon reaches out to you.
Correct. Yeah.
Were you kind of hoping to move away anyway, or was it really just this job was too good an opportunity to pass up?
Yeah, not at all. I almost didn't even pursue it because the position required relocation to Seattle, and I love Kansas City, but the position was really cool. So I looked into it and it seems like a great fit. So
tell me more about your background and where you hoped it might take you before Sure. Amazon swooped in and wooed you away.
Sure. So I grew up in Kansas City. I went to K-State for undergrad, University of Illinois for law school. I've worked at Citibank here in Kansas City. And then I've worked at Cerner for the past almost 6 years. And that's really, I've had a great career at Cerner, really enjoyed my time there. And prior to Amazon swooping in, that was my plan to continue.
Just keep going at Cerner.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great growing company and we are working on really cool stuff. So it's a good thing to be a part of.
So what was it about the gig at Amazon that took it to some other level?
Sure. So, I mean, I think the thing that's really appealing to me about Amazon is that since it is such a large company, I can really focus on the types of deals that I really want to put my energy into, because just the scale that they operate on, I can be more specialized in that manner. And it's also growing really quickly. So there's a lot of growth opportunity there.
Could you imagine an equally good opportunity presenting itself in Kansas City if you kept an eye out and like waited for the right thing to come along? I mean, you weren't looking for a job, so right. Who knows?
I doubt it right now, just because there isn't a company of that size here in Kansas City. And I think for the type of role that I have, which is negotiating contracts, that's pretty specialized and specifically technology contracts. There's just a limited number of companies that have that position at all, let alone one that would be just kind of on the scale that the Amazon role is. So
when do you leave?
Early May.
How do you feel? I mean, that's just a couple weeks away.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not sure that it's quite hit me yet. I love Kansas City, so I know I'm going to miss it, but I am really excited for the new opportunity. Yeah, everything's moving really fast, so I feel like I'm moving fast.
Well, hang out with us. I want to bring John Murphy in on this. John is one of the co-founders of KC Rising, the group that's just published this 3-year report on net migration in and out of Kansas City. Hi, John.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good.
What do you hear in Taylor's story?
Well, I think there's a couple of things in Taylor's story. First, specific to what Taylor said, she's got a very specialized practice, and for what Taylor does, there's probably no better place to do it than Amazon. So I wish her all the luck in the world as she moves out there. But I told her when we met this morning, we're going to get her back.
How are you going to do that?
Well, you think about Kansas City for a second and what we have to offer. There's been some recent studies, for example, that ask, what is it that causes a young professional to move? And the three things they look at is the ease of commute, the affordability of housing, and interestingly enough, open spaces. So they're not looking for an upscale urban environment necessarily. They're looking for things that probably, you know, our parents looked for and their parents looked for. And that is quality of life. And you can't get a better quality of life than that in Kansas City in terms of the commute, the affordability of housing, the open spaces.
I just want to hit pause here and go back to Taylor. Taylor, did those things factor into your decision-making process? Did you think about ease of commute, cost of housing, and open spaces when you were making this decision?
Yes, I did quite a bit. I think I have a fabulous commute right now. The worst part about it is I don't get to hear enough KCUR on my drive.
It's just too short.
It's too short. And that's, I mean, the convenience of Kansas City is great and unbeatable. I think that, I mean, that was definitely a factor. Yeah.
And cost of housing, open spaces?
Yeah. So cost of housing is a big factor. I think, you know, the salary difference made up for that. But, you know, absolutely that had to be factored in. And then the open spaces, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. Maybe I take that for granted. I live downtown and I like that, but I love the Flint Hills, so hopefully there's something comparable up there.
I hear there's an ocean near Seattle.
I've heard that too. I'm kind of a lake girl, but we'll see.
Well, none of those things mattered enough to make the difference.
Well, I think we'll see. I'm going to try to pick out a new apartment next week, and I hope it's really close to work. So,
so Frank, you're going to get her back because she's going to go there and realize that those things matter a lot?
You mentioned Frank, or do you want John to speak
to
that?
Oh, sorry, excuse me, John.
Yeah, I think those things do matter. And again, looking more generally in Kansas City, you look at what we're offering in terms of life sciences, the nexus between animal health and human health. Or you look at our architectural design and construction industry and the fact that it's basically globally known. More Olympic stadiums, for example, are designed in Kansas City than anywhere in the world. Water treatment plants designed in Kansas City provide most of the world's fresh water. Or you look at the technology in terms of a Garmin or a Cerner. And somebody can come and work in those industries and not spend their life commuting, and actually recognize that they're going to be able to buy a house. They're going to be actually able to afford a house much earlier than somebody that's going to a lot of different cities in other parts of the United States. Yeah, I think it is someplace that's, you know, a region that's going to attract talent. And when we attract it, we're going to keep it.
So what inspired you to do this research into people with bachelor's degrees, specifically leaving town?
Well, when we started KC Rising back in the summer of 2014, one of the things we promised the general public and the business community was that we were going to be transparent and metric-driven. So we're looking at any number of metrics. We're looking at what we call our three big dots, which are gross domestic product and median household income and quality jobs. But then we look at smaller strategic metrics along the way. And you have to kind of peel away the onions when you look at a metric, because we're looking at those metrics to determine where can we improve? What do we need to do to fix certain things?
Where can we improve specifically our economy?
Yes. Yes. And obviously talent retention and attraction is a big part of the economy. So we're looking at these metrics, and I know you're going to have Frank Lincoln on in a few minutes, who's an economist who lives and dies with these metrics, and he can explain some of those things in detail. But it gives us the opportunity to see where we're doing well and see where we need to improve. So, for example, in this area, one of the things we recognize we have to do is make sure that there is a close connection between the business community and the universities in the area, so that universities, when kids graduate from the universities, they recognize that what they have in this region is something that can't be duplicated anywhere else, and it's a strong reason to stay.
You know, it sounds from what you were saying earlier like you're also kind of hoping that there are certain industries or certain fields that in particular will draw people and keep them here and will offer the highest level of opportunity within those very specific fields. And it sounds like, but Cerner is such a big company, and it sounds like, is Cerner included in one of those areas?
Oh, obviously Cerner is included. One of the things we've been looking at, for example, is the whole field of information data. and the technology involved with that. And obviously Cerner's a strong part of that. Garmin's a strong part of that. Sprint's a strong part of that. And really, when you're looking at data accumulation, probably every company in the Kansas City region is a part of that.
You know, when Amazon was looking into where they were going to put their second headquarters, and Kansas City got excited for a minute about that, and we were included on some lists, a development like that seems like that would be something that would hold a Taylor Miller potentially in Kansas City. But it also didn't happen. I mean, Kansas City wasn't chosen for a variety of reasons. What do you think we could do to be more competitive for something like that? Or do we even want to be? Is that something that you would see as a goal?
Well, yeah, sure. Would we have liked to have had Amazon choose this region for its second headquarters? Obviously we would have. And we worked very hard to get it. But we learned a lot with respect to the Amazon initiative. One of the things we learned was the benefits of collaboration among both sides of the state line, for example, the collaboration among small, medium, and large businesses to work together to get an Amazon here. One of the things we also learned, though, was that Amazon had concerns about the talent pool that was here in Kansas City to fit their needs, because they were talking about increasing by thousands of jobs every year. So I understand Amazon's position with respect to the cities they chose on their final slate? Sure. But we did learn a lot from the Amazon initiative.
This sounds a lot like kind of a catch-22 for Kansas City, though. I mean, if what we need to hold on to talent is more opportunity, but the companies that would provide it want to see a stronger talent pool in order to come here, how do you get out of that cycle?
Well, I think it's a catch-22 if you're talking about the size of the wants that an Amazon had. But, you know, just an anecdotal story. This just happened yesterday. I talked to a couple from San Diego who's one of the spouses is in the technology field. They moved from San Diego to here, and he's a very specialized technology area. He had five different job offers and at a compensation level equal to what he was making in Southern California. So his wife mentioned to me yesterday, they moved to Kansas City. They're making the same compensation that they made in San Diego. And she said, that's a life-changing experience. She said, just running the numbers, they're going to probably be able to retire 5 years earlier than they would have if they had stayed in Southern California, simply because the same compensation level, but the lower cost of living that's being offered here.
In the report KC Rising just released, there it shows, you know, along a scale where the net migration kind of lands. So people moving in and out, but basically how are those populations changing overall? And specifically when you're looking at people with a bachelor's degree or higher who are 25 or older. And Kansas City is on the negative, you know, like the net migration is in the negative area. It's in the red. And in other pretty comparable cities, it looks like it might not be much, but it's generally above zero.
Yeah, that's an interesting figure, because obviously that data is several years old. It's not recent data, because that's just the way data is generated.
And it takes a while to compile and analyze that kind of thing.
Yes. And so some of the momentum this region is seeing with respect to things like the new airport, I don't think are necessarily reflected in those numbers. But another thing is, and again, this is part of peeling away the onion, an individual who lives in Kansas City and goes to KU and then stays in Lawrence is not treated in our numbers. They're treated as somebody who has left the Kansas City metropolitan area. Same true for Columbia, same true for Manhattan.
So we need to annex all the university towns.
Absolutely. That'd be the answer.
All right. Well, Taylor Miller, I am curious, you know, what could you imagine changing here in town that might lure you back or that might have made you more optimistic about a future here career-wise?
I haven't really thought about that. I think, you know, I really do think it comes down to kind of the specialty and sort of ancillary to technology role that I have that makes it that makes this opportunity in Seattle unique and from anything that I am aware of in Kansas City here. But I do think that something that's really appealing about Kansas City is due to the lower cost of living. There is kind of a lower barrier to entry if I wanted to do something, you know, start my own business. So I think if I, you know, wanted to look into a second career in a more entrepreneurial vein, then Kansas City absolutely would win. So,
well, call 816-235-2888 if you wonder whether you've reached a limit here in town in your career, or if you see another side of this story about what Kansas City has to offer for ambitious and highly educated professionals. 816-235-2888. In just a minute, we'll check with someone who already left for a marketing career with the NBA. I'm Gina Kaufman. We are back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm joined by John Murphy, a business leader with KC Rising, and Taylor Miller of Cerner, at least for now. Taylor's leaving soon for a job with Amazon in Seattle. We're talking about a 3-year study that shows a pattern of educated professionals leaving Kansas City, and you can share your story at 816-235-2888. Let's hear from our old pal, Lorenzo Butler. He is on the line with us from Miami. He used to live in Kansas City, doing marketing for the Kansas City Public Library, and now he's the business communication manager for the Miami Heat. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. Take us back to the crossroads in your life, that moment when you decided to leave Kansas City and move to Florida.
Well, and actually, I made the move from Kansas City to Sacramento, California, originally. Yeah, and that was late 2013. I never really saw myself leaving the metro. You know, I really enjoyed the public library and everything that we were doing there, but the opportunity of a lifetime just presented itself, and it kind of came kind of out of the blue, but, you know, I had to jump at that chance. You know, there's only a handful of people that are able to do that specific job, and so...
to work for the NBA.
Correct, yes.
So, but how did it come about with you? I mean, did you get a call like Taylor did?
Yeah, you know, actually, Donna Schwartz was a Kansas City public relations professional, and she actually made the jump to Sacramento and was recruiting me along the way. And so when it was official for her, she reached out and wanted me to come and apply, and, you know, she noticed the things that I was doing at the library, and but, you know, as I said, I didn't think I would ever leave Kansas City, but in that moment, you know, presented with that opportunity, I felt like it was too good to pass up.
So was it that the NBA held a special place in your heart, or just the level of position that and the level of work you were going to be able to do was something that you were never going to find here?
You know, I think it was the latter, specifically because of the level of work and doing it in the professional sports industry. You know, obviously in Kansas City, there's only 3 options for that at this point in time. So, you know, it's very unlikely that that would happen in Kansas City for me at that time. So that's really what the draw was. It was hard to leave the city, you know, and the friends and family and things like that, and the way of life that I had become used to, but, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime presented itself, and I just, you know, felt as though I had to take it.
What's your career like now? Can you just tell us a little bit about the kinds of stuff you do?
Sure, and I have to apologize for my voice. I'm a little hoarse because of our game last night. But
you sound good.
But, yeah, I really enjoy it here in Miami with the Heat organization, and again, it was just a situation where the opportunity presented itself to come to Miami, and I couldn't pass it up. It's a world-class organization, and I love being in South Florida. The culture and the diversity, and, you know, you're always learning just about different ways of life for people. And some of the aspects of my job here, I manage our PR on the business side, so everything that's off the court, I'm handling in terms of media, publicity, and things like that. So to really enjoy it, and it's, you know, it's something different every day, and it's always 80 degrees, so it's also amazing.
Do you, I mean, do you feel like it was worth it?
For me, yes, absolutely. You know, I'm just a two-hour plane ride away, always from Kansas City, but to be in this position with this organization, yeah, I absolutely think it was worth it.
You mentioned diversity in Miami, and I wonder if there is, in part, a cultural piece of what makes it worth it for you.
Well, you know, I think Kansas City itself is underrated in terms of culture. There are so many talented people that you and I both know in Kansas City, from different cultural backgrounds and abilities, and I think it's not really known outside of the Kansas City area, but you know, in South Florida, it's celebrated here, and I think that might be one of the fundamental differences. You know, I frankly don't believe that the local government in Kansas City really understands you know, the importance of cultural diversity and you know, putting emphasis on the cultural districts that are in Kansas City to help elevate the metro area and to make it a little more worldly. A lot of the talented people that are in Kansas City aren't being backed, and as a result, you know, they're really unheard of. And here it's totally different. It's, you know, culture is celebrated, diversity is celebrated, and people want to learn about others. And a lot of times you'll find people moving down here for that very reason. So I think that does play a role in it, and I think you will see other talented people leaving Kansas City, not for the reasons that I did, but for those reasons in terms of cultural diversity.
Wow. Well, John Murphy of KC Rising, do you have any questions for Lorenzo? He's just, I think, given you a lot to think about.
Well, yeah, he did. I'm not so sure I have a question. I do have a comment, and I think Lorenzo makes a good point about emphasizing the strengths that we have. I'm originally from the East Coast, so I think there's still a certain brashness, even though I've been in the Midwest for 39 years. And sometimes I think we in the Midwest suffer from a kind of an aw shucks kind of approach to life. We do have a lot to offer here in Kansas City in terms of cultural diversity, and we should be shouting about it from the rooftops, and we don't. And I think one of the things we're doing to fix that is Team KC, which is part of the Kansas City Area Development Corporation, works with about 150 different HR and talent acquisition recruiters around the region. And one of the things they've done very recently is institute a program called Explore KC. And they've talked to various cultural segments of the Kansas City communities, and they've put together quick reference guides for use by candidates and new hires. And that's going to include demographic data. It's going to include community resources. And we've appointed Kansas City ambassadors in the various parts of the region to help people coming into the region get acclimated. And I think that's going to be a start to talking a little bit more proudly about what we have, because sometimes I think we recognize we have it, but we're too quiet about what we have, and we need to do a better job of that.
You know, Lorenzo has also mentioned that it was one of his professional connections here in Kansas City that ultimately gave him that ticket out of here on some level, you know, like, and that points to the possibility that when you lose one good person, they're paving the way for others to join them.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. But that works vice versa as well. When you get somebody in at a job where they're really enjoying where they work and they're enjoying where they live, that's going to work the other way. One of the things I've said all along, no matter how much somebody loves their job, if at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon they leave that job and they don't enjoy their weekend, that person ultimately is not going to stay in Kansas City. So we really have a twofold purpose here. We have to make sure that individuals that are coming to Kansas City or that are already here not only enjoy their job, but they enjoy their community. and we have to do both of those. And the other thing I'd comment on is both Taylor and Lorenzo mentioned in different words that they're leaving or have left Kansas City for the opportunity of a lifetime. When somebody has that opportunity, all I can say to that is Godspeed, and you know, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Well, me too. But the question is, do we have someone's opportunity of a lifetime?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Particularly in the areas of the life sciences, particularly in the areas of our design community. I think in areas not necessarily in the contract work that Taylor is doing or the sports work that Lorenzo wanted to do in the NBA, but we have it in the tech fields, we have it in the life science fields, we have it in the design, architectural, and construction fields.
Lorenzo, is there anything that you want to respond to or just add to this conversation before we let you go and recover your voice from last night's basketball game?
No, you know, I agree completely with everything that's being said, but I think I would also add that it's important to have our, have the local government in KC put resources into the cultural diversity. I think, you know, everything that's being said is accurate. We have talented people there, and I just don't think they're given an opportunity. A proper opportunity in Kansas City. I think there's a lot of emphasis, not to get off on a tangent, but you know, if you take everything that's going on with the 18th and Vine District, it's a historical district, but I don't feel like the effort and the attention to detail, so to speak, is being placed in that district from the government as it is in the Power and Light District and other newer areas. So I think just things like that, where you have talented artists, musicians, and things of that nature there in Kansas City that are being overlooked, if the resources were there for them to really showcase themselves and have the proper backing, I think that that adds just, you know, a little more cultural diversity in it, and it would also recruit people of that ilk to come to Kansas City as well. So that's all I see in terms of that.
And of course, we just heard news yesterday about a recommendation that the Jazz Museum there temporarily closed to deal with some of their difficulties. Lorenzo, I'm going to let you rest. Thank you so much for joining us from the Miami Heat. It is great hearing from you.
No problem. Thank you, Gina. Always great to hear from you as well.
Thanks. You know, Taylor, anything you want to respond to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the confidence that I have to go to Seattle really does come from growing up and working in Kansas City. Everything that I've learned that makes me qualified, I think, for this job I'm going to take is from what I've learned at Cerner. And I mean, that is absolutely a company of opportunities. And because it is not as big as Amazon, I've been able to watch it more than double in size in my time there. I've been able to see how, an entrepreneurial company, tech company grows and see those challenges. And so I think that it really is because of Kansas City and because of my career here that this opportunity has presented itself.
Frank Link is with us now from the Mid-America Regional Council. And Frank, what are the bigger... We've talked to individuals about their experiences. What are the patterns you see? I mean, what can you tell us about this?
Well, golly, there's a lot to talk about. First, you should understand that KC Rising is all about raising the economic competitiveness of greater Kansas City. And we have these big dots that John described around median household income and quality jobs and gross domestic product. And our goal is to be a top 10 metro among 30 peers that we look at, the 15 immediately larger than us and smaller than us by population. And Seattle is the biggest one of those peers. It's nearly twice as big as Kansas City. So it's going to have more different kinds of jobs than we are. Miami's even bigger than that. And so there is a bit about... we are trying to grow into the top 10, but we are not there yet. So these kinds of things, this is sort of normal and natural in a way. The disturbing trend is that the net migration of those with a bachelor's degree has been declining gradually over a period of years, and it suddenly slipped negative in the last year for which we have data. And it's still just a 1 year, piece of data, and you should never overemphasize one piece of data in an economic times. There's just lots of stuff going
on. Right, it could be a blip on the radar.
Could be a blip. It's based on a sample. The sample could change next year. It could look totally different next year. But the longer term trend is concerning, and the entire economy is being driven by talent. All the innovation that creates value that we then export to the rest of the world, bringing dollars in that grows a regional economy, comes basically from talent. So it's critical. That's why KC Rising has most of its initiatives are frankly around talent development. We may always lose people to a Seattle on that, but we can grow our own talent. This sort of goes to the problem that Lorenzo was mentioning about the divides that we have in Kansas City and how that continually holds us back from growing our own talent, from really taking advantage of all the talent that is here. And
making sure that people are happy here.
And they're happy here and they are developed to their full potential here. And so that's why KC Rising has initiatives around providing people who may not have gone to college in their family yet, but first-time college goers to get a scholarship to help people. We have 300,000 folks who have been to college but didn't earn that degree, so they don't have that earnings potential. So working with them to try and get them those extra credits that they need so they can be more productive and help spur the regional economy.
You know, when Taylor says something like, that it's her job at Cerner and that it was the size of the company when she started and being there through its growth, mm-hmm. that all of those things contributed to her being in a position to take this incredible job at Amazon. Is that maybe it's sort of sad because the idea being that we're a great place to launch off from long term might be a tough sell, but is that something that we could see as our identity? Like does that not work for the idea of economic growth long term just because you need that?
So sort of what creates growth in the long run is this idea of creative destruction. That the idea that you are creating something new at the same time you're abandoning something old, and sort of what Taylor is doing is doing her sort of own version of creative destruction in the economy. That kind of churn is a good thing. And if you can churn but also move forward, and this is the chicken and egg thing that you were bringing up, you churn, you win some, you lose some. But if you're always moving forward, then you get to the point where you become the destination. And we are a destination for many of the folks that live around here. We are not the destination maybe for someone in Miami, but we are a destination for all the areas in the Midwest. And we can grow to the point where we become considered, Seattle wasn't a destination for a long time either, but it became so expensive in the Bay Area. Maybe Seattle's not a bad place. Denver's experiencing that now. Minneapolis, to a certain extent. Our turn is coming. And so it's up to us to prepare the ground to make the investments, to build the capacities that really do create the top talent and the businesses that go along with it.
Let's talk to Miguel in Atchison. Hi, Miguel.
Hello.
What do you want to share?
Well, it's funny you say that about people moving from Miami specifically to here. My family is from South Florida. I was raised down there. I did my university up here. Then I moved away for a job, and then I moved back for a job. So in my entire family, my oldest brother was actually trying to leave South Florida. You just kind of get tired of always being late for something you never knew you had to be at. And so he tried to move up here, but he's a production manager, and he just struggled to find a job that paid him even relatively comparable to what he was making down there.
Production manager, could you be a little more specific?
He essentially helps in like warehouses, design systems, and how to produce things more efficiently and working with people, morale, things like that. And so he just struggled to find a job in that industry that did well or that paid well enough or significantly enough. For him to justify the move. And he wasn't looking for a pay increase in any sense. He was actually looking for a pay decrease because he just wanted the style of life that we can have in the Midwest. But essentially what ended up happening is he just was unable to find it and found other opportunities down in South Florida that are going to even pay him even more down there. And then my sister wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to, her and my nieces and whatnot, her family were going to move up here as well. But they were trying to sell their business to actually come up here. And the plans just kind of fell through. But it is a destination for a lot of people, especially if they know someone who's lived up here and have been able to experience the peace of life that we can have in the Midwest. It's just a matter of maybe explaining to people that, hey, it's a great place in that way as well.
Well, thanks, Miguel. I'm curious, how does the kind of growth that provides those opportunities not inadvertently undermine the laid-back lifestyle that he's describing? Do we become, you know, Frank, you talked about being like that we're not going to be a Seattle or something like that. Well, in some ways, you know, maybe that's kind of a good thing culturally, at least for some people. When you talk about the commute, the cost of housing, open spaces, those are the things that we've heard are focus points. But, you know, do you lose some of that if you get the growth?
It's always a balance. You know, you want that high quality of life and the low commutes and the space that we've got, but you also want the dynamism, the diversity, the range of opportunities, the potential for growth too. And it's sort of how you do it that matters more than whether you do it. And so, you know, in an area like Kansas City, we have areas that are more urban, more dynamic, more diverse, and we have areas that are more laid back, more open. And it's getting the right mix of that, and not, then sort of being able to invest in ways that create higher growth.
What do you think, John? I mean, what is your response to what we just heard from Miguel?
Well, this is a destination city. There's no question in my mind about that. The Kansas City Area Development Council, which is basically charged with attracting businesses into this region. I'd say probably 10 years ago, we were competing with Des Moines and Omaha and Tulsa. Now we're competing with Atlanta and Denver and cities on the West Coast and cities on the East Coast, because slowly but surely, Kansas City is no longer the best-kept secret in the region. There are opportunities here, not only for individual talent, but also for companies that bring talent with them. And I think that's going to continue to grow. Just based on the momentum we've seen in this region over the last 2 to 3 years in terms of things that are happening with respect to the airport, things that are happening with respect to various parts of the region, and they're going to continue to happen. I think we just have to hold our heads up and realize that occasionally we are going to lose people to great opportunities, but we're going to gain people to great opportunities as well.
Well, Frank Lank with us from the Mid-America Regional Council and John Murphy of KC Rising, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Taylor Miller, currently of Cerner, recently hired on by Amazon. Good luck in Seattle.
Thank you very much.
We'll get you back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for more Central Standard in just a few. At a ball game in KCK, a bunch of Hawaiian-shirted, lei-wearing ukulele players strum along to Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the seventh inning stretch. These are the Kansas City Ukesters, and they may be far from sandy beaches, surfboards, and coconut shells, but they are very active here in town. From ukulele flash mobs to a new gathering called Ukes on the Roof. It's a monthly jam session on the roof of the downtown library. I'm Gina Kaufman here with one of the Ukesters now on KCUR's Central Standard. David Furman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm great.
Is the ukulele just a small guitar?
Not really. It is very much like a guitar, and it's very much a small guitar, but it only has four strings. It's tuned a little differently, but it's played basically the same. It's strummed. The chords are very much the same shapes of your hands and things like that. So it's, in a way, it is kind of like a small guitar.
Tell me more about the ukulele and why you love it.
Well, it is very adaptable. I mean, it's an instrument when you pull it out of its case, nobody's going to take you seriously. It'll put a smile on everybody's face, and then so the bar is very low when you start to play. And
it's kind of like a funny hat.
Kind of, yeah. But it's also can be a very serious instrument. I mean, there's people out there who are virtuosos, Hawaiians, Americans. I mean, all kinds of people are taking it up and taking it to a extreme level. Most of the people around here are we're in it for the social aspect of it. We have fun. We play. There's good players, lots of beginner players, you know.
Am I wrong to picture ukuleles being like more at home in, say, the Pacific Islands?
Well, yeah, at one time, and I think that's what people envision when they see a ukulele or a grass skirt, you know, or a ukulele. They think of Hawaii and, you know, the sun setting or the moon rising or whatever. But in fact, it's quite popular all over this country and really all over the world. There's clubs in almost every country. On our website, I have listed clubs from, you know, Germany, France, Indonesia, Russia, Japan. I mean, there's clubs everywhere. And we have, I think, 6 or 7 here in the Kansas City area. And that goes all the way to Lawrence and it goes up to Cameron. But in this area, there's quite a few.
What is the history of the instrument?
Let me open my book here. It's originally a Portuguese instrument. It came from an island called Madeira, and it was called a machete at the time. And Portuguese sailors took it to Hawaii, and the Hawaiians took it and said, "This is ours now." And it's become a Hawaiian instrument, and now it's kind of a worldly instrument. You know, you can play any type of music on it, really.
So your events in Kansas City are pretty surprising. We heard you playing the Take Me Out to the Ball Game, but also you have had ukulele flash mobs on the plaza.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those where we would show up. Somebody would just stand out in front of some place and start playing the ukulele, and all of a sudden somebody would walk up with a bag from, you know, Saks or whatever, you know, whatever stores are down there, and then pull out a ukulele, and then somebody else would come up with a tennis racket and a ukulele, and pretty soon there's, you know, a dozen of us playing ukulele and playing the same song. Obviously, it was practiced to a bit, but yeah, we've done flash mobs. We invaded a wedding one time. We played for a couple coffee shops where we just ran in and started playing.
And they didn't know you were coming?
They didn't know we were coming.
What about the bride and groom at the wedding?
Well, we sort of stood on the perimeter of their event. It wasn't during the wedding, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah, we were a little bit more careful. But it was like a reception or something at Loose Park. And we charged in and stood on the outside and played something.
Surprise serenade?
5'2" or something, yeah.
Why? What is the... I feel like this is just right for an instrument like the ukulele, but I can't explain why.
How do you mean, just right? So for us, like, to do something?
Yeah, kind of kooky.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, it's a real lovable, likable little instrument. People see it and they smile. They images of Tiny Tim come to everybody's head at first, you know. But yeah, it's a friendly instrument. It's not intimidating. It's not a harp. It's not a grand piano. It's not, you know, a cello. It's just a ukulele. So
when did the ukulele community in Kansas City start to get organized? I mean, how did you go about getting a bunch of ukulele players together?
Well, it actually started with about 5 of us about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, 2007. I looked for... I wanted to start playing with other people, playing ukulele. So my wife and I and 3 other people met at someone's house and started the ukulele group. And now we have near 300 people on our mailing list, a Yahoo group. We have probably 20 to 30 people show up at every meeting, which is monthly. And there's the other groups all. Everybody has a little bit of a different routine. You know, one club does it one way, one club does it other ways. And so people find their own little niche of how they like to play. It's a very social instrument. You know, it's. I was telling Coy earlier that it's kind of like
our producer.
It's like our bridge. It's like a bridge club. You know, you're coming there and doing something, but you're also interacting and talking and sharing stories, and you know.
You know, the Ukesters is just one of many ukulele groups around here. There's a Ukulele Fight Club, which is a regular jam session type group. And then there's Ukulele Science Theater, where people get together to learn harder, jazzier tunes.
That's right. That's right.
Why is this suddenly so popular? Or is it not so sudden?
Well, I don't think it's so sudden. It has really taken, since the ukulele first came to the States around, you know, the 19th century or so, it has gone in waves. It was real popular in the 20s, then it became real popular in the 40s, and then it became popular, you know, so there was a time during World War I where the doughboys would take ukuleles to the front because it's so mobile and so little, and then they could go up and play songs. One time we played at the World War I Museum, and we did all songs from World War I, and we played there a couple times, and it's one of those instruments.
So we had not really planned for this, but you did bring your ukulele, and I wonder if you would mind just playing a tiny little bit of a ditty, just very briefly, maybe a favorite tune.
Okay, well, let's try Norwegian Wood.
How did you get into the ukulele? I mean, how did you personally get into it?
Well, I don't know. I just started playing it. I started collecting them. I used to live in Seattle. It was interesting listening to the show before this. But I moved here from Seattle, and that was where I started playing ukulele. And I started collecting them. And so when I ended up down here and wanted to keep playing, I had to meet other people to sort of support that.
But you don't know
habit.
How you started playing the ukulele?
Well, I've been a musician my whole life. I've been a bass player my whole life. I've played in all types of bands, rock and roll, swing, folk, bluegrass, you know, so on and so forth. And I think I was taken to the ukulele because, as I said, it's such an adaptable, maybe adaptable is not the right word, but you can play such a large variety of songs. You know, you can play pop songs, country songs. There's people who play classical. There's some incredible jazz players playing ukulele. So there's so many openings and opportunities to play a lot of different styles.
Do you think that part of it is the size when you talk that you can be so social with it? You can just like grab it and go.
Oh yeah. I mean, exactly. I dragged an upright bass around for 20 years, 30 years, and carrying a ukulele around is a joy. I'm going to take up the harmonica next because that'll fit in my pocket.
So tell me about the newest thing, Ukes on the Roof.
Ukes on the Roof is a group that started, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, I guess. And Teresa Bolton, the one who organized it from the library, had this idea to put people up on the roof and play outside. Well, that hasn't worked out because the weather hasn't worked out.
Yeah, the weather's been terrible.
Yeah, so we play upstairs on the fifth floor, I believe, in a really beautiful room. And it's a lot of fun. That's a great building, by the way.
Well, hopefully it'll warm up soon.
Yeah.
It's supposedly warming up today
as we speak. It's beautiful outside. It's beautiful.
Our time is up. David Furman, co-founder of the Kansas City Ukesters, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Ukes on the Roof meets on the fourth Monday of every month at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library, and this probably goes without saying, but they meet on the roof. You can listen back to this morning's discussions at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. And while you're there, check out yesterday's conversation about grit, why it's such a buzzword in the classroom, and why efforts to measure it might be misguided. Tomorrow is a food show. The critics will guide us through all the new coffee shops in town, and we'll visit one of our critics in her kitchen. That's tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.